Welcome to God and Country Biblical Exposition. On this week's program, I'd like to talk about the banking crisis, the collapse of Silicon Bank in California, and some other regional banks. This has been quite a concern for some people. Some economists say this is just a blip on the screen. Others say this foreshadows a bigger banking crisis. Many people are trying to put a good face on the situation because if people panic, economic collapse will be a self-fulfilling prophecy. In order for money and the financial system to work, people have to trust the system because the whole monetary system is built upon trust. The dollar is only worth something as a medium of exchange if people think it's worth something. And that is a metaphysical perception. And this is a reminder that nothing in this world is of any intrinsic value. Even gold is simply a yellow metal. Bread is more valuable than gold if you're starving. So whenever we see financial collapse, it should remind us of what God has already told us. Proverbs chapter 23, do not weary yourself to gain wealth. Cease from your consideration of it. When you set your eyes on it, it's gone. For wealth certainly makes itself wings, like an eagle that flies toward the heavens. Or as Jesus said in the Sermon on the Mount, Matthew chapter 6, verse 19, do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moth and rust destroy and where thieves break in and steal, like Silicon Bank executive thieves. Verse 20, but store up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust destroy, and where thieves do not break in or steal. So we shouldn't really be surprised about banks collapsing. We should expect it. And we shouldn't be despondent because God has told us we should have already been laying up for ourselves treasures in heaven. That should be our nest egg. In this world, nothing is lasting. Nothing is of true intrinsic value. Nothing is sure. When the stock market collapsed in 1929, nobody knew it was the beginning of the Great Depression. In fact, the stock market actually rallied back for a while. People bought back in. There were plenty of bulls in the market saying, wow, this is a great buying opportunity. But then the bottom fell out. So in the words of Larry Kudlow this week, a conservative Christian economist, quote, what we know is we do not know. So finally, an honest economist. Also, one thing is certain. We're never going to hear from the media that the economy is in trouble or that a recession is looming because we're coming up upon the next presidential election cycle. And one thing is for sure, that the incumbent party will be thrown out of office if there's a recession. So left-leaning ideologues in the media, but I repeat myself, will not be reporting on any bad economic news. Now, if the political right was in the White House, we'd be hearing that the world is coming to an end. Now, I'm not trying to be cynical or partisan. I'm just telling you the truth. The media has an ideological slant. They have a political agenda. The media is no longer objective. The philosophy of journalism today is not to objectively tell both sides of the story, but to push what they call truth, a certain political moral ideology. Now, before I discuss the financial reasons for the collapse of Silicon Bank, I want to begin with this point. The financial problems in regional banks are primarily a spiritual problem. It's not an accounting problem. It's not a regulatory problem. It's not a liquidity problem. It's a spiritual moral problem. In that the primary cause is spiritual and moral, and the secondary results are financial. For example, when the prodigal son in Luke chapter 15 squandered his father's wealth and became hungry and had to feed the swine, someone certainly could have come along and said to the prodigal that he has a financial problem, that he has an unemployment problem, that he has a cash flow problem, or he has upside down asset liability problem, or that he has a risk management problem. Yet all of those results were not the primary cause. Why was the prodigal son in hunger? Because he had a spiritual moral problem. Greed, lust, ingratitude, selfishness, laziness. That caused him to take and squander his father's wealth. As Ronald Reagan said in a speech back in 1983, the real crisis we face today is a spiritual one. At root, it is a test of moral will and faith. That's why, as Jesus said, that if we seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, all of those other things that we are seeking for, food, clothing, shelter, housing, will be added to us. Because a determiner of financial well-being is one's relationship with God. However, we can see how easy it is for the atheist to only see those superficial results and not understand the deeper cause. So at work, at the water cooler, if they even still have those today, or at the coffee machine, when your coworkers ask you what you think about the Silicon Bank collapse, you can get them thinking by simply saying, well, it's a spiritual problem. Or it's first a spiritual problem that results in financial lawlessness. Hence, when the Bible addresses economic issues, the focus is on the spiritual issue, not the secondary results. The Bible doesn't just hand you a tissue for your runny nose. It deals with the disease. Deuteronomy chapter 28, verse 15. But it shall come about, if you do not obey the Lord your God to observe to do all of his commandments and his statutes, which I charge you today, that all these curses will come upon you and overtake you. Cursed shall you be in the city, and cursed shall you be in the country. Cursed shall be your basket and your kneading bowl. Cursed shall be the offspring of your body and the produce of your ground, the increase of your herd and the young of your flock. Cursed shall be your produce. Yet you might say, wait a minute, maybe it's a fertilizer problem, or it's a land erosion problem, or it's a labor shortage problem. How does obedience to God's moral law have anything to do with the agricultural economy? Well, who sends the rain? Who motivates the workers? Who causes the farmer to make long-term investments in the composition of the soil? Or who causes the farmer to create innovation? God. Lesson. If you're having economic trouble, the first solution is to repent and get right with God. Oh, sure, after that will come all sorts of better economic policy and choices, but those policies never materialize unless there is first a spiritual change in the individual or the nation. And that's why when American business practices are exported to ungodly countries, they never seem to work very well. Deuteronomy chapter 28, verse 2, all these blessings will come upon you and overtake you if you obey the Lord your God. That's the key. Here's another example. In the days when Israel returned from Babylon, the people were working hard in their businesses, but they were not being successful. Haggai chapter 1, verse 5. Now therefore, thus saith the Lord of hosts, consider your ways. You have sown much and have harvested little. You eat, but there is not enough to be satisfied. You drink, but there's not enough to become drunk. You put on clothing, but no one is warm enough. And he who earns wages to put it into a purse with holes. So in ancient Israel, there was plenty of economic activity. And there were probably all sorts of faulty economic and financial policies. But the prophet points to the fact that there was first a spiritual problem in the nation. They had neglected the worship of God. There's also the example of King Rehoboam, Solomon's son, 1 Kings chapter 14. Now it happened in the fifth year of King Rehoboam that Shishak, king of Egypt, came up against Jerusalem. He took away the treasures of the house of the Lord and the treasures of the king's house, and he took everything, even taking all the shields of gold which Solomon had made. So Shishak was like the Grinch. He even took the last can of Huhash. The point is that under King Rehoboam, all of the wealth of Israel built up by Solomon was gone in a moment. As Solomon himself wrote in the book of Ecclesiastes, that he was concerned with what would happen to all of his labors if a fool became king after him, which is exactly what happened. Ecclesiastes chapter 2, "Thus I hated all of the fruit of my labor, for which I have labored under the sun, for I must leave it to the man who will come after me. And who knows whether he will be a wise man or a fool, yet he will have control over all the fruit of my labor, for which I have labored by acting wisely under the sun, this to his vanity." And also Ecclesiastes chapter 9, verse 18, "Wisdom is better than weapons of war, but one sinner destroys much good," like Rehoboam, or like the woke, greedy, foolish bank executives. So along comes King Rehoboam, and he drives the nation off the cliff economically. So what does Scripture attribute the decline to? Rehoboam's inability to manage financial risk? Rehoboam's lack of military preparedness? No. Disobedience to God morally. The verses that came right before the description of Shishak's invasion, 1 Kings chapter 14, verse 22, "Judah did evil in the sight of the Lord. They provoked him to jealousy more than all their fathers had done with the sins which they committed. For they also built for themselves high places and sacred pillars and Ashtoreth on every high hill and beneath every luxuriant tree. There were also homosexuals in the land. They did according to all the abominations of the nations which the Lord deposed before the sons of Israel." Now verse 25, "Now it happened in the fifth year of King Rehoboam that Shishak, king of Egypt, came up against Jerusalem. He took away the treasures." Now, secularists would say this is superstitious religious nonsense. The moral behavior of the people doesn't have anything to do with economic success, they would say. That we can have economic success without God and religion. In fact, unbelievers will say that belief in God and the Bible are actually hindrances to economic prosperity. But people can disbelieve God's word. They can fight against it. But reality is reality. Proverbs chapter 14, verse 34, "Righteousness exalts a nation, but sin is a disgrace to any people." So after covering this point, that the banking collapse is first a spiritual moral problem, let's now look at the practical reasons for the collapse, the outward occasions, the financial and the economic crimes. I didn't want to start with that discussion lest we get the impression that those things are the primary issue, that all we have to do is to fix the banking regulatory system or the Federal Reserve system or the federal deficit problem and all is going to be well. No, in fact, there's just too much talk about those secondary issues, even among conservatives. But that shouldn't be the first focus. But however, it is true that when a people abandon God, they will practice economic lawlessness just like they practice moral lawlessness. The reason for the collapse of Silicon Bank is threefold. First, it's the fault of Congress increasing the federal deficit, greed. Second, it's the fault of the San Francisco branch of the Federal Reserve for not properly doing its job. They knew about this problem in Silicon Bank for a long time. They had supervisors, they had examiners, but they did nothing. The problem of laziness. And third, it's the fault of the managers of Silicon Bank for investing in ideological leftist causes. Proverbs chapter 12, verse 11. "He who tills the land will have plenty of bread, but he who pursues worthless things lacks sense." So first, Congress borrows money to spend on bloated federal bureaucracy, the federal deficit. It's destroying the value of the dollar. It's destroying and stealing from savings and investment, and it will destroy the economy. We all know that the price of everything is going up. The inflation rate, which usually is at 1% to 2%, is now running at about 8%. That's the kind of inflation that happens in third world countries. Politicians want to blame COVID. They want to blame supply chain problems. But inflation is primarily a function of an increase in the money supply. The federal government, especially under Biden, has pushed huge extra spending bills. The $1.9 trillion COVID relief bill, as soon as Biden took office back in March of 2021. Then in the fall of 2021, the $1.2 trillion infrastructure bill. Then the $700 billion inflation reduction bill in October of last year, 2022, which was really the Green New Deal renamed for the purpose of passing out money to Democrat constituents. All this was done on borrowed money. And in addition to this, the federal government borrows about $1 to $2 trillion a year just to cover current expenses. In 2022, the government brought in $5 trillion in tax revenue and spent $6.5 trillion. Now, the national debt now is $31 trillion, and it's going up by $1 to $2 trillion every single year. Now, no one has that much money to lend to the federal government. So the Federal Reserve just credits the federal government the money, and the federal government gives the Federal Reserve an IOU. This means more money is being circulated in the economy, which devaluates the dollar. The circulation starts first with federal employees, grants, contracts, entitlement payments. These people have more money than they should have, so they flood the economy with more buying power, which causes prices to go up. So how much does this federal borrowing affect the money supply? The amount of money in our economy, including dollars in circulation, bank accounts, money market funds, is called M3, which is about $22 trillion. If the federal government is adding to that money supply about $1.5 trillion per year to cover government payments, you can see why there's inflation. $1.5 trillion is about a 7% increase to the total money supply. And so inflation will be about that much. Congress has decided that inflating the money supply is an acceptable way to tax everyone's savings without the political unpopularity of raising people's taxes. So inflation steals the value of the money we have already earned. What the Federal Reserve is now trying to do to stop inflation is to raise interest rates on money borrowed from the Fed by the banks. This reduces the amount of money in the system, but it's not going to work very well this time, because the federal government is still pumping money into the system by overspending. So it's like the Federal Reserve is trying to bail out water out of the boat on one side of the boat, while the federal government is bailing water into the boat on the other side. The Treasury, the Secretary Treasurer, Janet Yellen, claimed that inflation is just temporary, which is really untrue, as long as the government continues to deficit spend. Now, a question I'm sure you have, well, maybe you have, I'll supply the question anyway. If the government has been borrowing so much money for so many years, why haven't we seen this kind of inflation in previous years? Well, here's my theory on this. First, there is a lag time between the increase in money supply and when inflation occurs. Second, the U.S. dollar is now being used in international currency. If we were a closed system, inflation would have happened quickly. But there are other nations using and holding U.S. currency. But eventually, with continually increasing M3, outsiders can't consume all of that extra money, and inflation hits us with a vengeance. the fact that there has been so much federal deficit spending and no dramatic inflation for so long has deceived people. As if the laws of economics are not valid, as if we can print all the money we want with no consequences, but payday has finally come. I said 2 years ago, when the government started giving out those relief COVID checks to everyone, what was it, $700 or $800, and then there was another $9 or whatever, I said that we're getting nothing because everything we buy will go up by the same amount within a year. Economic law will not be proven wrong. And it's worse than that because those COVID relief checks are not going to continue to come, but everything we buy will still continue to be at that higher rate. Our politicians should have known this, but they're not men of wisdom. Isaiah chapter 3, they're foolish children ruling over us. Look at this chart. Under the Biden administration, there has definitely been a spike in the money supply to cover government expenses. So, did you get all that? In short, the collapse of Silicon Bank was due to the greed of government deficit spending. These regional banks have long-term investments locked in at lower rates. And if the interest rates go up, they can't pay out the higher interest rates demanded by depositors. So that's kind of a simplistic explanation, but it'll suffice. The bottom line is that when the government is greedy, when the people are greedy, they print dollars and they destroy business investment. Psalm 37:21, the wicked borrows and does not pay back. Now, Silicon Bank could have weathered the corruption of the federal government if they didn't have their own internal corruption. Silicon Bank gave away $73 million to BLM at the height of the BLM protests. That's $73 million. Oh, wait a minute. Correction from the leftist media. Silicon Bank did not give $73 million to the BLM organization. What they did was give $73 million spread out to many leftist social justice organizations supporting CRT and BLM. So actually, the New York Post is correct. Silicon Bank donated $73 million to the BLM movement and other social justice causes. The point? They were squandering their revenue on ideological causes. Then Silicon Bank promised $5 billion, not $5 million, but $5 billion to invest in green energy, which is always a negative return on investment. And upper management and the board of directors bundled money to support Hillary Clinton's campaign. And now some Democrats, in order to save face, are returning the donations. And it's also interesting to note that Silicon Bank was without a risk manager in 2022, but the international risk manager, Jay Ursifa, was an interesting character. Quote from Business Insider. However, in a twist, the boss of financial risk management at Silicon Valley Bank, UK branch, Jay Ursifa, has been accused of prioritizing pro-diversity initiatives over her actual role. While Ursifa acted as the CRO of Silicon Bank in Europe, Africa, and Middle East, she organized a range of LGBTQ plus initiatives, including a month-long pride campaign and safe space catch-ups for staff, whatever that is. In the past, she also moderated the EMEA Pride Town Hall and served as a panelist at the bank's global Pride Town Hall to share her experiences as a lesbian of color, unquote. Is that significant? Well, even Business Insider realizes that probably her priorities were not in investing in sound businesses, but in pushing an ideology. Here's an article from Eric Revelle over at Fox Business, Silicon Bank and ESG. ESG is environmental social governance, which is what the World Economic Forum is pushing businesses to adopt. Quote, The failure of Silicon Valley Bank is being cited by the State Financial Officers Foundation as an example of what can go wrong when financial institutions prioritize political agendas over basic risk management. The State Financial Officers Foundation, a group of Republican state auditors, chief financial officers, controllers, and treasurers, released a statement that Silicon Valley Bank should have focused on safeguarding their depositors' money and making sound investments, but it's clear their focus was on pushing progressive agendas. Environmental, social, governance, ESG prioritization, is about pushing a progressive political agenda, even when it's at odds with sound financial or business decision-making, the financial officers wrote. Instead of placing an emphasis on hiring qualified candidates for critical positions within the company and making prudent financial decisions, Silicon Valley Bank focused on ESG, particularly diversity and inclusion initiatives, and courting China while the bank left its chief risk officer position open for 8 months. Also, the head of the San Francisco branch of the Federal Reserve had faulty priorities. Hence, the San Francisco Feds didn't come down on the Silicon Bank. The head of the San Francisco branch of the Federal Reserve, Ms. Daly from Wikipedia, the first openly gay woman to lead a regional Federal Reserve bank. Ms. Daly gave a speech saying that as monetary policy makers, our job is to navigate climate change. Well, the head of the Federal Reserve, Jerome Powell, responded to this. So it must have been a radical, controversial statement made on the part of Daly. Powell said, quote, "We should stick to our knitting and not wander off to pursue perceived social benefits not tightly linked to our statutory goals and authority. We are not and will not be climate policy makers. Taking on new goals, however worthy, without a clear statutory mandate, would undermine the case of our independence." And other banks, the International Swiss Bank, Credit Suisse, also went under last week. And lo and behold, their senior executive was also into LGBTQ ideology with leftist investing goals. This article, MX Pips Buncey, gender fluid executive at Credit Suisse, pushed for LGBTQ visibility as the bank imploded. Senior executive at Swiss Investment Bank, Credit Suisse, who claimed to be non-binary and gender fluid, spent much of the past several years campaigning for LGBTQ inclusion in the global financial system as performance at the company declined, unquote. So is there a connection? Absolutely. If you understand real life and how people's morals affect their work ethic. The Galatians 5 deeds of the flesh are a package deal. You rarely get one deed of the flesh without getting the entire package. Galatians 5. "Now the deeds of the flesh are evident, which are immorality, impurity, sensuality, idolatry, sorcery, enmity, strife, jealousy, outbursts of anger, disputes, dissensions, factions, envyings, drunkenness, carousings." This is the package you get. Here's another bank that went under. Signature Bank in New York City. A bank that refused to do business with Donald Trump. Quote from the article. "A closer look at the New York-based bank that collapsed Sunday revealed some interesting advertising ideas. Signature Bank, which denied then-President Donald Trump business in 2021, was shut down by New York State regulators. The bank put out one particular ad featuring a parody of the song Some Nights that attracted upward of 735,000 views in a matter of hours. Their executive team spent millions of dollars to produce music videos and TV shows about themselves. Try not to cringe as you watch this." So here's some of that video. I really don't understand why these executives are covered in feathers. Is this supposed to be a joke that typical bank executives ought to be tarred and feathered, as if this bank is doing away with typical banking roles and practices. You know, I don't know. You figure it out. Here's the video.
Ruthless, so many useless meetings. Some banks will sell their souls, some banks just feel real old. I wish they weren't so. But I still wake up, I still have the dream. Oh Lord, I still know what I stand for.
That's enough of that. You know, when I was getting my MBA from Rutgers, I saw this kind of nonsense in some of my fellow business students. We would be working together as a team on certain projects, and these students would suggest some of the most ridiculous, the most woke ideas for corporate goals and corporate solutions. And this was back in the 1980s. And even back then, I thought to myself, I hope none of these wacko students ever become the CEOs of major corporations. Well, apparently they have. You know, given the moral corruption in America, I'm surprised that we have any businesses left in America. But in time, as the old guard retires, we'll see more and more businesses go under, because unprincipled, ungodly people cannot sustain an economy. They will be cursed in the field. Deuteronomy 28. Silicon Bank was founded in 1983 to finance tech startups. Not only is it gone, but it looks like this is a sign that the prosperity of the tech industry in California and in Silicon Valley is in decline. Look at the current conditions of the communist state of California. Biblically, these people are turning the well-watered land into a desert, both metaphorically and sometimes literally physically. And that's a text I want to conclude with. The prophecy of Moses that in Israel's future, in her apostasy from God, there will be individuals who will come on the scene who will break God's law because they're following the stubbornness of their own heart without seeing any immediate negative consequences. They are lawless morally and economically, and yet they believe everything will be just fine. Deuteronomy chapter 29. So that there will not be among you a man or a woman, a family or a tribe, whose heart turns away today from the Lord our God and go and serves other gods of those nations, that there will not be among you a root-bearing poisonous fruit and wormwood. People who by their sin poison the nation. That's an interesting image. It shall be when he hears the words of this curse, he will boast, saying, I have peace, though I walk in the stubbornness of my heart in order to destroy the watered land with the dry. You see, there are no immediate consequences that he sees. So hence the title of this week's program, Bringing on the Economic Desert. Notice that there's always a face behind the corruption decline, a man, a woman, a tribe, a family. men like King Rehoboam, the executives at Lehman Brothers, the executives at Enron, the woke executives at Silicon Bank, Signature Bank in New York, and Credit Suisse. Here's an article from MarketWatch. Silicon Valley Bank executives enjoyed generous compensation in recent years, with CEO and CFO packages up 30% from 2018. Total compensation for the CEO of Silicon Valley Bank in 2022 was more than $9.9 million, including a $1.5 million cash bonus. Ezekiel chapter 16. Behold, this was the guilt of your sister Sodom. She and her daughters had arrogance, abundant food, and careless ease, but she did not help the poor and the needy. Thus they were haughty and committed abominations before me. Therefore I removed them when I saw it. When the unsaved are enriched and empowered, like the prodigal son in Luke chapter 15, or like Israel during her golden years, it always results in arrogant immorality and then collapse. Notice the judgment pronounced on those individuals who are poisonous roots, the cause of national decline. Deuteronomy 29:20, the Lord shall never be willing to forgive him, but rather the anger of the Lord and his jealousy will burn against that man. And every curse which is written in this book will rest on him, and the Lord will blot out his name from under heaven. Then the Lord will single him out for adversity from all the tribes of Israel, according to all the curses of the covenant which are written in the book of the law. Because as we read in Ecclesiastes chapter 9, the sinner is the destroyer of much good, destroying the previous built-up blessings of God. So here's a lesson. Ideas, values have consequence. The spiritual moral problems bleed over into poor economic choices. And that's practically why Proverbs chapter 14, righteousness exalts a nation, but sin is a reproach to any people. Now, let's not be discouraged, because all this is good. Would you really want the ungodly to continue to be financially blessed, enriched? Do we really want a nation that has thrown God out of the public square to continue to be blessed financially? Our government is already doing evil. Imagine if our government had all of the money it could use possibly. Imagine the evil it would then commit. What would these woke politicians do if they had an endless money supply? Psalm chapter 107, verse 33. He changes rivers into wilderness and springs of water into a thirsty ground, a fruitful land into a salt waste, because of the wickedness of those who dwell in it. So praise God, for his righteous judgments are true. His truth is marching on. Thank you for your prayers and support. Keep standing for Christ in an evil day, and may Jesus Christ reign.